Roxy Soxy.
And good afternoon, Tam Tam. How are you, my
life?
Wow. You know, I was in Lake Tahoe this past weekend working on a work event, and it was lovely. And then in the middle of the work event, the SAG strike happened.
Oh, that's right.
Right?
So does that mean while you're working, and we'll explain to our listeners a little bit more about what the SAG strike actually is, because a lot of people are confused by it. They're like, I don't understand why people are actually striking, because they assume that every actor is making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
But does that mean that while you're working, you actually have to stop what you're doing straight away?
So basically, it means that some of the talent that was slated to be there was not there. Like they were there and then they left. I'm assuming to join forces on the picket lines back here in Los Angeles. So it kind of made for an interesting few days, because some people were coming back also to cover a movie premiere that happened on Saturday. But cut to the movie premiere, and obviously none of the talent could come to promote the movie. So I believe that the red carpet was quite scant and there were not a lot of people, you know, because the whole thing kind of turned everything upside down. So I think, like, you know, I was talking to another kind of host friend there, and they were saying, yeah, we were talking about like the events coming up, and it was like, it's going to be really interesting, because a lot of when there's really a studio involved, you know, a lot of the talent can't come to promote anything. So red carpets are going to change, you know, the scope of events, I think, are going to change. Like there's going to be maybe a lot more beauty and fashion lifestyle kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, and with talent promoting as themselves and not for roles or for movies or TV.
When the SAG strike actually happened, it was like pens down. Like people, if they were at a movie premiere, they actually had to leave it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for me, my acting is so sporadic anyway. I'm not on a show right now. So it's like I have a movie and then I don't have a movie. But you know what it's affected is my husband's film, because he was slated to start shooting in August, the movie that he wrote and he's directing as well. And everyone was like poised to do it. And now they can't start. So, you know, they now have a tentative start date, and it kind of throws everything off the map. And they can get something called a waiver, which means that because they started the production before the SAG strike, technically they could go. But I feel like it's just a bad look, and it's also a bad move because we are in solidarity of this strike. And we can explain a little bit more on what is happening in the States right now. But like, we want to support the actors and we want to support the writers. So even though there is a way to get a waiver, I don't know if that's the right thing.
Yeah. You know, it's really tricky. We were actually speaking about that this weekend too, about like the optics, right? Because it's like, although some of the people weren't necessarily working at the time, that they were, you know, not wanting to kind of, you know, put forth the image that they were trying to work or trying to work in different countries or what have you. And so they were concerned about the optics. They were like, okay, you know, like we probably are just gonna, you know, pick it and come back and, you know, stand with our fellow SAG members and really try to make change. Right. But like, you know, it'll just be interesting to see, because I think obviously it does affect like the actors and the actresses and, you know, the studios and people directly involved, but it also affects a ton of other people, right? Because it's like
trickle down, of course.
Yes. It's like the people who do catering and the people who do, you know, dry cleaning and laundry and hair and makeup and like,
and then Los Angeles in and of itself, it's like, you know, people aren't now going out to eat. So it's going to affect the restaurants. It's going to have a far wide reaching effect than just like the A-list actors who aren't working for 4 months. You know what I mean? Like, cause I think that that's the perception, as people go, well, why are, you know, A-list actors, you know, even picketing, they make so much money anyway, like this is not going to affect them, but it's like 87% of people in SAG, Screen Actors Guild of America, which is a union for actors. They don't even make their enough money to be eligible for healthcare. 87%. And
that's shocking.
That means mm-hmm. that there's not that many people working, you know? So it's important for things like, you know, one of the main things on that they were fighting for was residuals, right? Mm-hmm. So for people who don't know what a residual is when the episode of your TV show or movie plays again, whether it's on that network or another network or gets sold. Like, for example, Pretty Little Liars was on mm-hmm. Freeform mm-hmm. and then it was sold to HBO. Mm-hmm. So when it was sold to HBO, every time an episode of mine that was played on HBO played, I got a little percentage. You get a little piece of the pie, right? So I got a little bit of money. It's not exponential. I think I only got, you know, the first time it was played, I got like $400 and three, mm-hmm. it goes down every time, then 300, then 200, then 100. Mm-hmm. But over time, that makes up sort of the deficit that you need when you're not acting to be eligible for healthcare, because you have to mm-hmm. make $26,000 a year through SAG. So through acting or whatever SAG you're eligible for your SAG fees from, to get your healthcare. So like residuals are a big one for actors. And these streaming services, it looks like, do not pay residuals, or if they do, they're so minimal that people aren't being able to apply for their healthcare every year. And like 87% of those people don't have healthcare. And I mm-hmm. think that what people in Australia don't fully understand, because I posted something on my Instagram about free healthcare here, and they said, well, it's not exactly free. And I was like, look, out of pocket, I took my daughter to the doctor last week, and out of pocket, it cost us $23 American. And we got her some medication for like, right. she had a little cyst, and we got her some medication, and it cost us $12 American out of pocket. Oh, and so God. I said, yes, it's not free, but mm-hmm. it's so close to being free, you know? And yes, you know, you do have to pay more for certain things, but you know, an average family in the US has to pay $22,000 per year for a family of four to have healthcare. So it's really important when SAG actors get eligible for healthcare, because it means that they're not paying $22,000 a year for their family. So it's like a big deal.
That's a really big deal. And it's like you're saying, I think the misconception is that if somebody's in SAG or if somebody is an actor, you know, like that they're making bazillions and bazillions of dollars. And that just isn't the truth. I was shocked when I heard that the threshold for healthcare through SAG is $26,000, you know, and that mm-hmm. most actors that are, you know, in SAG don't have healthcare through SAG, you know?
No.
So it is shocking. It really is. And this is the first time too in decades that both the Writers Guild and SAG has been striking at the same yeah. time. So yeah. I'm already thinking like Christmas movies are going to be affected, you know, because they're usually shooting about
everything
right this time in July. It's going to push the Emmys, obviously, too, because the mm-hmm. Emmys, like, you know, usually occur in September. And it's just the whole fall schedule is going to get thrown off. So mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to see also how long it lasts, because I hear at this point that nobody is willing to come working. Together. So it could be,
and they're so months. Far off. Like I posted on my mm-hmm. Instagram stories what the actual deal looks like, because mm-hmm. SAG is asking for specific things, and mm-hmm. you know, and the studios are like, no. Like, for example, these little things that I think are so fair, you know, when I audition, mm-hmm. and this might be interesting for people to know, like when mm-hmm. I audition, they sometimes make us audition when they've even cast the role. So think about that for a second. So you're paying for a cell, because now we don't mm-hmm. do auditions in person. So like it's very costly for people. I'm lucky and grateful that I am able to buy the right equipment and go to a self-tape place if I have to, but there's no go into an audition. All you have to do is show up and they tape you. Now mm-hmm. you're taping yourself. You're doing your hair and makeup, you're uploading it, you're sending it. You now have to pay for things like WeTransfer because they have big files. You have to have a camera, you have to have lighting. And a lot of the times that you audition, the role is already cast. Mm. They're just doing it. I don't even know why they're doing it, in case that person falls through. But I think it's really shitty, because it's also your time. It's your money. It's and you don't even know, like, if someone's already been cast, like, why are you wasting that time and money on something? So one of the offers for SAG is like, if the role has been cast, that has to be told to the actors so they can mm-hmm. choose whether they want to audition for like a future project or not. And they rejected it. They rejected things like even, you know, please give the actor the the accent, the tone, the genre of the audition piece so they know what they're doing, so they're not wasting their time. And they rejected that too.
But why? Like, what is the reason, right?
You
wouldn't want somebody
monetary.
Yeah. Well, if I was the casting director too, I would want like who's ever coming in to be as prepared and as knowledgeable as possible. So it's not like a waste of all of our times, right? If somebody's coming in to read for like a British, you know, accent and they're coming in with like a country accent or something, you know, it like doesn't make sense. It's like, why wouldn't you want that person to know and to be prepared? I mean, I understand sometimes giving people just cold reads, you know, like not giving them natural words.
If everyone's in the same boat, sure.
Right, right. If everyone's in the same boat and you want to give somebody a cold read because you kind of want that first impression of like how they sound or how they look, but, you know, within like also giving them, you know, a description, like this person is like from, you know, Spain or wherever, you know, then that makes sense. But if it's like, there's just nothing and you're going in, it doesn't really make sense, you know?
And it's just, you know, I my manager was like, oh, I just wish everyone could come together and see everyone's side. And I don't truly believe what the studios are saying. And they're saying they don't have enough money to make this type of content anymore, but yet they're paying the CEOs of these companies $100 million, and the requests are not grandiose. We're not asking for much. For example, a per diem, which is when you go on location, you get paid like $50-$60 in cash. So they give you money to like go buy your meals, right? For lunch or dinner, whatever. And one of the points was like, for inflation, if, you know, we can increase that money because inflation is so much higher now, and they're just like rejected. You know, and we're talking about these little things, and it just makes you feel like you're just such a small piece to this massive puzzle, and just no one cares about the little guy, you know? And again, the perception is, you know, there is no little guy because actors are all that 1%, but they're not. There was this great TikTok that I saw recently, and this guy was like on so many Netflix films, and he was the lead of all these different shows. And he's like, I still had 5 other jobs. Like, I couldn't make ends meet. Like, it's not what you think it is. And even for me, like Pretty Little Liars, and yes, of course, I'm very grateful to be on those types of shows, but the pay is not, it's not anywhere that you would think it would be.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like you're saying, I mean, thankful, you know, that a lot of people can afford like to not have the highest per diem, but like you're saying, these young, up and coming, like, that don't really have their footing, but maybe they're new and fresh, like they need that money. And I thought it was also interesting too, because I was reading somewhere that some of those streaming services don't release their streaming numbers. So no one really knows. Yes. Like how many people are viewing, you know, at what time and downloading and all the things. So it's kind of like, they have this like veil of secrecy too on top of it. So it's like,
which doesn't make you feel safe. You know, it doesn't make you feel like people are being honest and open about it all. And I think another massive one that we should talk about is AI and just AI in general, and what AI is going to do to our kids, what's going to do to us in the future. But a massive one that we're trying to fight for is AI and taking someone's image and being able to use that image. Like, for example, if they wanted to do a whole nother Pretty Little Liars show with Jenna, my character, as the lead, they could do that. And I could never see it. They could use my image. So it's like me actually being in a show, never pay me for it. I have no approval of what's being said that I'm doing as my face.
Right.
And we have like no say. It's like even background actors, they're saying that they'll come in for one day and then they can use their image for up to 70 years. So they get paid like what, $90 for the day for 12 hours work or whatever it is, like maybe more, probably, it's probably not that. It's probably a couple $100, $300 for the day. And then for the next 70 years, they can use that person's image in whatever they want. And that person doesn't get paid.
That is wild to me. I cannot believe that. I mean, literally, it's actually scary. It's like, you could take somebody's image, you never even stepped in the studio. Like you could pull an image from, you know, Google or like social media or something and create an entire role or like an entire cast that blows my mind. That absolutely blows my mind. And like you're saying, without even paying these people, these real life people who they're like taking from. I know that that is where I think it's going to get really sticky.
Yes.
You know, like,
And it's so much more than just the acting part. Like when my husband and I have these really deep discussions about it, like I used to have to stop at a certain point because it just gets so overwhelming to me to even think about. But there's so many jobs that we will not need because of AI. For example, an architect, you will never need to hire an architect and pay tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars for an architect because you will literally be able to say what you want into a computer. They will be able to give you all the blueprints of everything you could possibly want for your house, all the plans, anything you want. And you know what will cost you? $25. So why is someone going to hire an architect when they could just do it on the computer for $25? It's cost effective, it's fast, and you get exactly what you want. So why are you going to need that? And that's the same with the writers, right? Writers are really scared because they'll write a script like a Hallmark film and you get paid for that. Probably not that much, but you get paid for the script. And then whatever that AI chat, what is it? G chat? Yeah, like you'll literally be able to get to a point where you just say, write a movie about a girl and a guy in the snow. They have families who are feuding and they fall in love at the end and make sure that there's these elements, you know, involved in it. And within minutes, you could probably have a script, you know, that you will never need a human writer to write that script. So you'll never need someone to write Hallmark movies anymore, you know, and those jobs will start to be eradicated. And architects, I mean, sir, there's no reason for even people to like serve food to us anymore. There's no reason. I mean, you go into certain McDonald's, you walk up, you press what you want, it gets served to you like on a little machine. Like in Los Angeles, there's a robot that comes to you with your food. You're not going to need those jobs anymore. It's just going to be so, it's not going to be cost effective. And so many jobs will be taken away.
Yes,
Big higher level jobs too.
Yes, it was so funny you said that because when we were traveling back yesterday in the airport, we stopped at McDonald's just to like get a little something. And that is exactly what I saw. I looked over, I guess I hadn't been to a McDonald's in a long time, and I looked over at the drink machine and it was just a revolving, like a conveyor belt of like drinks that were being poured from the machine without a human there. I mean, I remember, I think the last time I was at McDonald's, somebody was there filling up the drink cups, you know? And it's like, I looked over and it was literally just a conveyor belt going around. It was like whatever the guy was typing in for like on the cash register was being programmed. And it blew my mind. I was like, oh my God. And so there were only maybe two people in the whole thing, actual human people working. The rest was all machines. Like
And
it's
the thing about it
wild.
too is they'll never get it wrong. The human error part will be gone, and the computers will be so. My husband said that like even flying, it will be at some point in our lifetime, probably, definitely in our kids' lifetime, planes will be able to fly themselves to the point where there'll be no way to crash them. It'll be so foolproof because of the technology that there will be so many backups to backups to backups to backups to backups that there's no way that the plane could even come down. Like that's how good these machines, how AI is going to get, that these human error, it'll be eradicated. Like we won't need humans. Like, and then what's going to be crazy is this is what scares me is like there's the whole scamming part of it all where, you know, my voice, like just say voice on this podcast, an AI machine and scammers can actually take my voice and scam my mom. Like, it's like me leaving a voicemail to my mom saying like, hey mom, I'm here. I'm stuck. I need help. Please send X amount of money. I don't know what to do. I'm like, I got to get out. I've lost my credit card. Someone took it, you know, but it will sound like me speaking to my mom over voicemail that she'll do it because that's how good these systems will get.
Oh my God, let's not give them any ideas. First off, don't listen to us
Yeah, don't listen to
scammers. Second of all, do you think they can replicate what we do like on podcasts? Do you think like a back and
There will
forth?
be, of course, they won't even, they won't, there's just, there'll be no need for humans. I think that that's why, you know, a lot of these big leaders are saying, like, we need to figure this out now because
Harness it.
AI will get so good and so smart that it will start to have its own intelligence system and start to like want to eradicate us. Like, why are we here? What is the point of us? They will become their own entity, right? And it's like those movies that we saw like back in the day in the 90s where you're like, oh my God, this is so, like, this will never happen to us. This is, you know, this is so far-fetched. But But it, you know, there's a book, my brother read it called The Singularity Theory. And I think they talk about this a lot. And that book was written so long ago. And I was like, nah, that'll never happen. But there's absolutely a possibility, if not a probability, if these world leaders or people who have their hands on this technology don't figure this out now.
But before it gets into the wrong hands and really spirals, right? Like,
yes.
That's so scary.
And they say too, and this is what, like, with kids and their image online is like, by having that blueprint of our kids out there, AI and that technology can use their identities and, like, identity theft, all of it, you know? So it's a big can of worms. And I think that we're not really seeing how scary it could and maybe is going to be.
Right. No, that is so scary. I wanted to ask you something because you brought up our kids and it's kind of shifting direction a little bit, but I really want to know your opinion on this. So
love when I give an opinion.
Tell us more.
I love an opinion.
So is it okay? Okay, let me preface this first by saying my daughter's birthday party is coming up, right? Because she just turned 9. So we're planning the birthday party, but the birthday party place has a capacity number for the amount of kids you can invite because it's just a small room. It's not like a big, big place. So there's a capacity number. So on the invitation, I wrote, no siblings, please. Now, do you think that that is okay or is that rude?
I think if you explain it, it's not rude. I think if you just leave no siblings, I'd be like, man, shut up, come to your party. Screw you. It's all for one, one for all. But if you said no siblings, please, very limited space, I would be like, no problem. And to be honest with you, I've got two kids and one, you know, I have a little one. So it's great to not bring her sometimes. I'm like, oh God, then I don't have to go. That's great. I can just be with the little one, like Sean can take her. But I think an explanation is important. And then what do you do about, because I always tell everyone no gifts. But then I'm also at a point where my kids want gifts.
Yes.
So it's like this weird, like, I don't want gifts for two reasons. We have so much. We're so lucky and, you know, blessed. Like, we've got so many toys. I don't think that the kids need more toys. Number two, it's just like more stuff. Like we're all about trying to get rid of stuff rather than more stuff. And then three, I don't want to put people in position. Like, I can't expect that everyone, you know, that stuff adds up. People are spending $50 to $100. And I don't know if that's fair to them when there's so many birthday parties and like, I'm asking them to, like, but then my kids do want the gifts. So I always say no gifts and then she always gets gifts, but at least when I say no gifts, I feel like the people who can't, or they're freaked out because they don't have enough time and they're not stressed about it, then sometimes we don't get if there's like 10 kids, maybe we'll get 7 gifts because three people won't. But most of the time people do bring gifts. So what do you think about that?
So I think it's totally fine to put no gifts on there. But most of the time that I do see that, I feel like everybody, especially if it's a kid, people bring gifts because they're like, you know, they're a kid and they know what that feels like, you know, like it's so exciting when a kid opens a present on their birthday, you know? So I totally get that. I totally get that. And I know what you mean by like paring down and not wanting more stuff, you know, because like you're saying, there's plenty of stuff, don't need it. You know, it's like, it just takes up room, but there is something magical though, about having your little one open presents on their birthday and seeing all the gifts that they get. And they get so excited about it.
And granted, then 2 seconds later, they don't even do it.
Exactly. 5 minutes later, they're like, okay, I'm done. Like, I don't need that. But it is like the moment, but I do think it's a good thing. Now, but what about for adults and gifts, like girlfriends and gifts? Like, let's say, cause your birthday's coming up. Do you expect your girlfriends to get you gifts?
I used to love gifts, but as I get older, I realize that yes, I do feel like a lot of my friends have extra probably spending money, but I've always been pretty conscious about like, what about the people that don't, you know? And like, I've been in situations in my life where I haven't had that extra money and I felt really overwhelmed because I want something that's really nice and I didn't have that extra money and I felt pressured. So I feel when it comes to gifts, personally, I love gifts, but I'm totally okay to not have gifts. Mm-hmm. I just want people to do what makes them happy. Like instead of being like, don't do it for me, do it because, oh my gosh, I want Tamara to have this because I know she loves hand cream, but I don't, but like, I know, like, but like she likes a candle or whatever. Like she likes a lipstick. I love lipstick.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Because it's like a little token of like, she would love this and that makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think is a nice gesture, but I'm also a big fan of like, I love doing the, everyone puts in $20
mm-hmm.
and then one thing gets bought or $30 or whatever, because everyone's got $20. I don't feel, I mean, not everyone, I shouldn't be saying that, but you know, some people have $20 and you put it all together. And by the time you've put it all together, it's $100 and something
mm-hmm.
and you buy something nice, like a little ring or something. And then that's like a little memory. I don't know. I'm not a big, I think because gifts were such a big deal in my life when I grew up that I expected them and I was disappointed when I didn't get them, that I don't want to teach my kids that it's like all about the gifts. It's all about the gifts. It's all mm-hmm. about the gifts, because they're going to be disappointed at somebody. They're like, oh, I didn't get what I wanted. I didn't get this. I didn't get that. And it's just, I'm trying to let go of that idea and attachment mm-hmm. to stuff. You know what I mean? Because yeah. I feel like stuff can kind of bog us down.
It's hard too, because I think like grandparents especially like love to spoil their grandkids. So it's like, even when I'm like, okay, like no gifts, or, you know, I'm trying to limit the gifts, I will find that, like, for example, my parents will like go and like, you know, send my daughter a lot of gifts. And I'm like, wait, can we try to like parcel this out a little bit? So it's like, you know, so cause she, of course she's going to get excited by the gifts and like, you know, think that like, you know, oh, I'm special because I've gotten all these gifts. So it's like, that is kind of a struggle for me too. But as far as the adult gifts go, I totally agree with you on the group gift scenario. Like, I think that is a great idea and everyone can put in as much as they can or they want, you know, and come up with like a good, you know, good group gift.
And you end up
gift.
Getting a nicer gift because, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little bit more money. And but yeah, the gift thing for me is interesting. I also think that like, I've never been taken. I don't know. Maybe I've got bad friends, but not anymore, Roxy.
Hello.
I've never been taken out to lunch or dinner with a group of friends.
Like, on your birthday?
Gone to lunch and paid for it. I've paid for everyone's before many times. Like
yeah.
my 30th was at the Soho House. I took care of it. Most of the birthdays I've had,
mm-hmm.
I took care of it for everyone. And that's probably just because I was raised to like, well, if people are coming all the way there, then you take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then right. I felt like, dude, like I always go to other people's birthday and I always pay for the birthday person. I'm like, wait, is this how it's supposed to work? So I don't know what uh-huh. the right thing to do is. I don't know what you do, but like normally I've paid for everyone. Like I've never been paid for.
That's interesting you say that. And I wonder if it's like an age thing, because younger, like post college and then like after for like, you know, a certain amount of time, I feel like, for example, I have a group of like college girlfriends. So we would go, you know, to dinner or lunch or whatever to celebrate each person's birthday. And usually everybody but the birthday person pays. So it's like all the friends chip in, you know, that person whose birthday it is, you know, doesn't have to pay. But then now as I've gotten older, I see it shifting. And now the birthday person is the one that pays and like kind of treats everybody. And also I notice that if it's like couples, like if it's like, you know, like if the husbands or the partners are there, then usually the birthday person pays, versus like if it's just, let's say, a group of the girlfriends, then I feel like the group pays, if that makes sense. I don't know. It's like weird. Like it's like unwritten rules. Like I feel like no one's really saying it, but then like when the bill comes, it turns into like that.
I know. And I hate,
it's
oh my
weird,
gosh, I
right?
just saw a TikTok yesterday. Uh-huh. Tell me what you think about this.
Okay.
Is that the bill came to $5,000. There was a huge group of people. It wasn't a birthday, but mm-hmm. the bill came to $5,000. And the girl was like, yeah, we all split it. And this guy stood up, and I actually agree with him. He stood up and he mm-hmm. said, I am not splitting the bill. He's like, I literally didn't have anything. Everyone else had lamb chops and steak and mm-hmm. all this alcohol. He's like, I had like a chicken salad and I'm paying now $300 for a chicken salad. I think mm-hmm. I like our group of friends who do have an awareness. Like mm-hmm. if it's so close and everyone's, it's like right. a drink here and there, then there's no right. issue. But if someone's drinking like 10 drinks and the other person like has not even had a sip of water, I think, and that's what happens in our friendship group. They say something, mm-hmm. they're like, look, you didn't drink anything. You pay $20 less or $30 less or whatever. And I think that's fair. I mean, what do you think about that? About splitting the bill when it's so high and you didn't have very much.
Yes, I do think, especially when it comes to alcohol, because alcohol is very expensive and very pricey. And if someone's ordering a $200-$300 bottle of wine and somebody else didn't even drink, then I don't think the person that didn't drink should even pay for that, you know? But if it's within, let's say, a certain, like less than $20, then like maybe everybody splits it like evenly just for like convenience sake.
I don't even mind mm-hmm. spending $20 or $30 extra to yep. split the bill. I don't even mind up to $50 or 60, yep. whatever. But when it starts to get like $100 more and you have had nothing and no one says anything, mm-hmm. I think it's bad etiquette. Like, and then the person can choose. The person can say, no, it's fine. Let's just mm-hmm. split the bill. But when you don't even get a choice and you're mm-hmm. like, wait, you don't know what that person's going through. What if that person's going through a really hard financial month right. or whatever? I think they shouldn't look like they're being cheap or they're not like caring about the rest of the girls or whatever. Right. And you know, a lot of people don't feel safe saying, well, this month, like I'm really struggling about this or my mortgage just went right. up or whatever. Like people don't want to say that at a table. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important for the person or maybe the host to be like, okay, well, she didn't drink. So you pay X amount less or whatever. I think it's important for someone to say that. And then the mm-hmm. person can choose. Then yeah. the person will be like, no, it's fine.
Let me ask you this. Okay. There is a friend of mine. He was just telling me this. He went to dinner with another friend who came into town from the East Coast. And so they went to dinner and they had a beautiful dinner, you know, like went to like a top restaurant here in Los Angeles. They had cocktails, they had food, you know, they just were ordering like normal, like how they normally would. At the end of the meal, the girl didn't pay for the food. She was like, okay, thank you. And he was like, and they're not dating. They're not together. They're just friends. Like was not a date. Like they were just a catch up sort of a thing. And he was like, excuse me. And so basically they probably had the dinner, I'm guessing, like, cause it was probably $400, like a cocktails dinner, you know, like a nice place here in LA. And she just didn't offer to pay, was just like, okay, and
then what did he say? Like, did he just let her walk out?
He ended up paying, but he was so mad. He got up and left like right after the payment happened. Like he just got up and left. Cause he was like, I cannot deal. Like he was like, bye. Like he was so pissed. Like he just got up and left.
But I wonder why he didn't say, I'm sorry, the bill came.
I'm forgetting.
I wonder why he just didn't say like, well, we're splitting it. Right. Cause
well, I think, right? I'm sorry. He did say that. He did this. This is the part of screening. Cause I'm like, wait, why is this not when I'm telling it?
Yeah,
I'm
like, it doesn't sound like, yeah. This sounds like it's his fault. Yeah, like yeah. He didn't say anything.
She got there and she was like, oh, I don't have my wallet.
Oh, then I would have said Venmo me at the table.
I think. Oh, at the table.
Like, oh, yeah, I'd be like, okay, great. So just send me 200 and whatever. Yeah. Here's my Venmo and we'll.
Yeah, you're right. You know what? He should have said that. You're right. Because that would have been, I think he was so mad in the moment because he felt like.
Yeah, he was probably so shocked by it.
Yes. He felt like it was a setup. That's what it was. He felt like it was a setup. Like she knew she wasn't going to be able to pay or she wasn't going to bring her wallet or whatever the reason was. So he felt like she already knew that. And she just kind of ordered as if she was going to pay for her share. So that he was really pissed at the end. And then he got up and left. That's what it was. She didn't have the wallet. That's what it was. Okay. But he was like, the way he explained it as if it wasn't like she just left her wallet and was like, oops. Right. It was like,
she was like, I can't.
Yeah, I can't. Like, I can't pay for this and expected him to pay for it essentially for her without saying anything.
Yeah, I think that's ordering. BS.
Yeah.
I think that's total BS. You know, that's BS, I think right? that we should always be conscious and, you know, forward thinking about people's situations. Again, it's not our job to like always think what everyone's thinking all the time, but just being conscious about it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I think that comes with age too. I never assume anything when I go to dinner with people or even in general. Like my whole thing is like, you know, when I was younger, I used to be like, well, if they're not calling me back, like they hate me or it's about me. And I'm just like, people are all dealing with their own stuff and it's not always about you. And if someone's at the table and they can't pay, it's not that they don't love you. It's just that they're probably having a really rough month. And I think just being conscious and aware of that is like really important as we get older.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And like you're saying, was it Mel Robbins? Mel Robbins, I think, is the one that talks about like having low expectations, right? Like low expectations. And then you don't get you don't get upset about things as much, or like, you're not bummed out.
And people get confused because like I put on my Instagram once, like you're supposed to recalibrate your expectations. Recalibrate them, not have none. Because people are like, well, having no expectations, then like, you know, there's things that I need and that's fine. That's called boundaries and asking for what you want, but you can't expect somebody to do or be or say the things that you want to say or be, because they're not you. Everyone's different. Everyone has different thought processes and traumas and like their own stuff that if you have an expectation of how something's going to go, you will always be disappointed because, you know, you're setting yourself up for failure. So recalibrate those expectations. Don't put those on other people. Be like, well, when we fight, my husband should, so he shoulds and coulds and woulds, should come and say he's sorry. He should be loving in this moment. Can he see how hard I'm working and I'm tired or I'm premenstrual? He should be like this. You're just going to set yourself up for failure and feel like shit. And so like my husband and I had a fight like 2 days ago. And, you know, while I was in it, I haven't had a fight with him like this where it's a fight about nothing. And like, we just have all our trauma is like blinding. It's like, you know, I'm just talking from my traumatic place. He's just talking from his traumatic place. We're all just like, we weren't even, I was rereading the text. I was like, oh, because we're fine now. And I was like, we weren't listening to each other. I would say something and he would talk about a completely separate thing. And he kept mentioning, but last night, and I'm like, dude, we've moved on from last night. And it's like this weird pull. And I thought, wow, like it was bad habits that I have, which is like expecting, back to the expectations, expecting him to argue with me in the way that I like to be argued or give me what I need in the moment and reassure me, because that will make me feel better. He needs to make me feel better. That's what I expect. Right. And when he doesn't, then I don't like it. And then I attack because my expectations are so high, you know? And then there's a difference between expectation of like, yeah, like if you need your husband or partner or wife to like pick up your kid and your kid's always late, then that's an expectation. That's a real expectation that you need to be met, because you don't want your kid waiting at school. You know, those types of expectations I think are good to have, but you also have to recalibrate them. If they're 5 minutes late, you got to let it go. They're 10 minutes late, you got to let it go. And if they can't make it because there's bad traffic, then you go get the kid. You know what I mean? That's like, that's a way to recalibrate those expectations.
Also, when all else fails, everyone should check out my Insta story today. You just take your partner to the best Mexican restaurant and give her a nice fat margarita. It should do the trick.
Oh, yeah. Margarita does the trick. Margarita still does the trick for me, but it's been a minute. We could talk forever. I know we have to go soon, but we could talk forever about all the things that are going on.
All the things that are going on, girl. What about?
I've been intermittent fasting.
Oh yeah, you're doing it, right? It's still happening.
It's been a month. I haven't given it up.
Are you obsessed still? Do you still love it?
I love it. Intermittent fasting, you know, is, and I'll be quick about this, but it's so much less than, I know people do it for weight loss and they do it to get healthy, and that's great. It is not a form. If you have distorted eating, my PSA is do not do this. If you've had, you know, I've had past eating disorders, but it's been 15 years since I've had any type of distorted eating. So I felt like I could do this. It has not triggered any of my past eating disorder issues. But what you do, theoretically, the idea is 16-8. So you fast for 16 hours and then you eat within an 8-hour period. So typically I stop eating around 6:30 and I'll eat again at 10:30. The first week I did not feel great. I felt pretty dizzy, because what happens is we're all sugar burners. What happens is when you stop eating, your body starts to use sugar for energy. And when your body is using sugar for energy, you actually start to get hungry. That's where hunger comes from. It's like you burn all that sugar and your body just doesn't know what else to do because it's looking for more sugar. And that's why we crave so much sugar. So what happens with intermittent fasting is it turns your body from a sugar burner to fat burner. So after a period of time, after 12 hours, your body has used all the sugar within it, within itself, and will now turn on to burning fat. And when you're a fat burner, when you stop burning sugar after 12 hours and you start burning fat, of course you lose weight. But there's so many more incredible things that happen that people don't talk about. Your mental health gets better. Your sleep gets better. My husband had so much inflammation in his joints. He is not sore at all. He couldn't even get out of bed from after COVID because he was so inflamed in his knees and his back and his shoulders. He has no pain, no inflammation whatsoever. So many people say that it's helped them with PCOS, any autoimmune issues that they have, because our bodies are meant to eat and fast, eat and fast. If you think back to it, like we were hunters and gatherers, right? So as we go out and would hunt and would eat, and then we'd have to use that storage to then fast in those lean months. So our body is actually designed to do that.
I've got questions.
I'm sure you do.
Let's start from the top. First of all, are you hungry? Because I would feel like I'd get hungry like in the in-between
time. The first
week,
you're hungry. And then it's this fascinating thing about like, why when we get hungry, are we so like scared of that feeling, right? We're like, oh, we're hungry. We must put something in our body. And it's interesting because when I go through that, so yesterday I had like a weird hunger pain around 7 p.m. And I just let it pass. And I literally have not been hungry since last night, 7 p.m. because my body was probably burning sugar, like I said. Right. And then when it switches over to burning fat, you don't get those hunger pains. I'm not hungry. It's really so fascinating. And then when I eat my breakfast in the morning or I eat at 10 or 11, I'm so full until like 3. Like I'm so full. Like I don't have, you know, like sometimes you eat and then 2 hours later you're hungry again. That does not happen. Like I don't have those weird hunger pains or anything like that. And if you are hungry, you can do this thing where like, I just do like a decaf black tea in between. And funnily enough, like that helps. The first week is the hardest because your sugar level is all over the place. I used to suffer hypoglycemia all the time. I don't have that. I don't get dizzy anymore. I now can exercise in the morning without food. I never could do that. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to eat before I work out.
Right.
Now it's like, I have so much energy. I don't ever have crashes, but it takes time to build up to it. And I must say for people who are listening to this, you have to do it in accordance to your cycle, because Alicia Vitti, who came on, she said that, you know, when it comes to intermittent fasting, they haven't done a lot of tests on women. And that is true. Like all of it has been, you know, women are kept out of so many health studies and you have to do it. We're going to have this amazing guest on who talks about this. You have to do it in accordance to your cycle. So the week before your period, you can't fast. Because if you do, you'll mess up your estrogen, you'll mess up your progesterone. And when you're ovulating, you can't fast more than 15 hours. And when I say 15 hours, so you stop at 6 and you then eat at 9. You know what I mean? So it's just like that 15-hour window. But when you're not in your ovulation or just before your period, you can fast. Sean did a 24-hour fast yesterday.
What?
He felt amazing.
He wasn't starving.
No, not at all.
How? How?
And he felt amazing. Like it was so interesting because when he did eat,
right.
And this is, again, like, you know, people listening go, well, this is distorted eating. It really isn't. If people do the research, like, it's actually fascinating because not only did it not trigger my distorted eating from 15 years ago, it made me enjoy food more because I was like, oh, I can enjoy this lovely bowl of pasta and I can enjoy even this piece of cheesecake because I know that it's not going to be, I'm not going to eat the cheesecake and the pasta and then right before I go to bed, I'm eating a bag of chips and you know what I mean? Like, you know, you get to enjoy what you're enjoying in the moment and then you can let your body rest from it. And it turns on human growth hormone, which is like people spend so much money to get a tiny percent of what actually you get from fasting. It helps testosterone in guys. Cause as you get older, your testosterone levels lower. It's been fascinating. It's been a month and I don't even know if I can go back to
regular eating. Can you eat anything you want within the 8-hour period? Sure. Like, could be anything.
Yeah, but you want to try to not, like, because because your sugar levels are pretty balanced after mm-hmm. when you're after your fasting, you don't want to like break your fast with like a big bowl of ice cream.
Yeah.
Can you? Sure. But it's just going to really spike your sugar levels. And you might, I mean, you'd feel fine, but you're probably not going to mm-hmm. feel the greatest. You want to break mm-hmm. that fast with like, I always break it with a protein shake. So banana, peanut butter, protein powder, and almond milk. Mm-hmm. And it's the best thing in the morning because I'm like, oh, I'm breaking it. And then just a lot of like proteins, you can have carbs, whatever, but it is fascinating. It's a fascinating mental thing too, because I've seen people who do like these 7-day water fasts and
right.
they said that they've never had more energy in their entire life because
wow.
your digestive system's not always like bogged down and processing, right. processing.
You're and making you tired.
Energy.
And, yeah. So what about, can you yeah. drink coffee with like before you break
black.
The fast? You can do it before yes. you break your fast.
Yes.
You can have coffee.
You can do black coffee as long as you don't have anything that has a calorie in it, because the calorie is what breaks the fast. It stops you from being in a fasted zone. So if you've got calories in milk, okay. calories in sugar, whatever it okay. is, all of a sudden your body's burning that, and it's not burning. You haven't turned into a fat burner at that point. So you can have black tea.
Yeah.
You know, obviously water, stuff like that, black coffee.
Can you do hot water with lemon?
Of course, if it's okay. as long as it, yeah, of course, okay. of course. Like that stuff is totally fine. And it's not like, think about it. You just eat a little earlier and you eat a little later in the morning. It's not like,
yeah.
it's not like
it's
you're
not
fasting
crazy.
All day. You just start eating at 10. You know what I mean?
And you can drink while you're doing it. You've just, as long as you drink within the time block.
You could drink, I'm sure. But you know, what's interesting is you don't, when you're fasting, it's like kind of what people say about, and some people take Ozempic for alcoholism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this. It's because something about balancing your blood sugar levels, which you do from fasting,
mm-hmm.
makes you not crave the alcohol anymore. Like, it's almost like you don't, like, I don't crave sugar. I used to eat sugar every night. I'd have like half a block of chocolate. That's
right.
all I would want. Even though I can have that now, I don't want it. My body doesn't want it. It's like, because my sugar levels have completely leveled
right.
out, that I'm
stabilized.
Not like, yeah, I'm not like, oh my God, I need some sugar to feel better. Or oh, I need some sugar for energy, or some sugar for, cause I'm depressed, or sugar for whatever. I don't crave that at all anymore.
So what are you saying? I should do it?
Well, wait, see me in person and see if I'm different to you. And if I've given you some kind of, like you're, you know, inspired to do it because you see me in all my glory, then yes.
If I see you running through fields, jumping over flowers and chasing rainbows and butterflies, I might have to do it. And it's interesting to do it with your partner too. Like, I feel like, I don't know, maybe David and I would be like competitive about it a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
where we'd be like, well, I fasted the longest, or like, I did like, you know, ate healthier today. I don't know. It feels like it can kind of get a little competitive. No.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't feel, I feel like we're for the first time on the same page with it, because
okay.
it's nice to do something together.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's nice to just be like, it's, you got to kind of be on the same page. But what really happened is I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was doing it, he saw the benefits and then he wanted to do it too. So I always believe in leading by example instead of telling someone what to do, be
yes.
like, you know, I'm cutting out gluten, I'm doing this, I'm doing a fasting, I'm doing a health kick or whatever. And then people kind of go, oh, they look good, they feel good, they're nicer, they're, you know, they look vibrant, you know what I mean? So yeah, I feel like if people lead by example, then whoever the partner is probably going to follow through. And the kid, you know, not the fasting with the kids, but the kids, like when you're having a healthier lifestyle, your kids kind of fall into that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like when you're exercising and outside, cause you feel better, your kids are, you know, outside with the ball and they're not sitting on their iPads because you're more active.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, damn. I guess I'm going to hit the hay and go intermittent fast now.
What's the time right now? And I'll tell you if you can.
Okay. Tell me if I can. It is 4:46 PM.
Okay. So just do it easy. Do eat until 7.
Okay.
And then see if you can eat tomorrow at 11.
Okay. So 7.
And you know what?
11.
Even if it's stressed, just do 10 just to like give
okay.
yourself a first start.
Okay.
You could do 7 till 10.
7 till 10. Okay. So I have to wrap it up. My eating by
yeah,
7.
I think you're having an operation. You know, they tell you not to eat after midnight.
Yeah. They're like, be sure you fast in the morning.
Yeah. You'll be like, meh. feel like I'm going in for a C-section.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to be late to my own C-section. I'm going to eat this pizza.
No, you don't want them to to suffocate while the tube's down your route.
Oh my God. I know. That was the hardest too. Cause they gave me like a 2 PM time slot. I'm like, I'm a little thirsty and hungry.
Question before we go, will you get a colon? Everyone's talking about colonoscopies in TikTok right now because so many people are getting diagnosed for colon cancer so much younger these days. Mm-hmm. Will you get a colonoscopy?
Oh, I've got a story about that. Sit around, kids. Here we go. Okay. So back in the early aughts, and when I was just a young spring chicken here in Los Angeles, some friends and I decided we should go get a colonoscopy. So we go to the place, and this is when colonoscopies, I guess, were kind of like relatively starting to catch fire a little bit. Like people were getting really interested in them and like really wanting to try them. So we went to this place, and I just remember the nurse comes out and she's like, okay, I have one plastic tube and one like metal tube. Who wants the plastic tube? I was like, plastic.
It's not a colonoscopy. So, you're talking about a colonic.
Colonic. Oh, are we talking about?
I was like, wait, you guys had a group colonoscopy? So you all went under and you had a mini surgery, like not a surgery, a mini procedure. Like, and you meant a colonic.
Okay. That's what I meant.
Colonic, guys, is when they just suck the poop out.
Yeah.
It's really not a colonoscopy. A colonoscopy is a medical procedure to see if there are any polyps in there that they scratch out. This is just to get the poo out of you. That's what you're talking about.
That's exactly what I was talking about. Oh, yeah. Switching gears. Okay. Switching gears to colonoscopy. Yes, I also had a colonoscopy. The worst part of it was just drinking the stuff like the day before, because when I went in, they give you a shot in your arm and you sleep the entire time and you feel so rested. It was like the most restful sleep. So actually the actual procedure itself was not bad at all, I thought. But I had to get it because my maternal grandmother had colon cancer in her 60s. Right. She didn't pass away from it, but still they're like, well, we should just be sure, go in and get it. I didn't think it was bad. Now, have you had the colonoscopy yet?
I have not. I'm not at an age where I'm supposed to yet, but I think people at 45 are starting to go in. Definitely by 50, is pretty standard. Mm-hmm. But yeah, 45, they're now saying is the first step to go, like the first year to go in. Mm-hmm. And then every 5 years, so 45, 50, 55, 60, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so much. But at least they can, see what's going on. And a lot of these polyps, which can turn into cancer, they scrape them out, So mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I haven't done my boob exam yet, where they squish your boob, the mammogram. I haven't done that yet, but I know it's like soon. So I want to do that, but yeah, the colonoscopy thing, maybe.
You know what? Your mammogram should be your 40th birthday present to yourself.
Thank you so much. Oh, we should do, when they scan you do an MRI of your whole body.
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes. Let's do that. Can we?
Which will help our health thing. We'll do Botox after.
Exactly. We'll get a little,
Botox, but I feel like I should go to yours because she might listen to my neuroses since she deals with you.
She is the most patient, sweet Dr. Kelsey Roloffs at UCLA. Love you. Love you. Love you. She is the most patient, amazing doctor for Botox or any kind of, injectables. She's an ocular facial plastic surgeon. And yes, you should come with me to see her.
Amazing. Well, guys, that is it. I have got to get out of here. I love our little sessions. it makes me happy. I feel like I caught up with you and I forget that we're recording half the time. So
yes, I know. It's so good. It's like we're catching up,
I know. Well, guys, let us just come talk to us. We should really get our audience involved because there's so many of you that listen and try to get some callers or, feel like we actually are doing a podcast rather than just you and I chatting.
We do have some fun developments coming in the fall, though, which we haven't.
Oh, Lord. Yes.
We can't talk about yet, but there's going to be some amazing
going
stuff.
On. Mm-hmm. And we've got some incredible guests in Los Angeles.
Yes. You're finally coming back to LA.
I know you got me for 2 fucking days. Don't you fuck it up, Roxy.
Yeah, no, you're so funny. You're like, we're going to shoot 20 episodes a day.
Yeah. I'm so mad we can't shoot Friday too. Well, not that we need to, but just in case, like what if something goes wrong?
Girl, you're welcome to come with me to Disney anytime.
I know, if I had my kids, I would come for sure.
You should.
You know, I'm going to, are you going to be back for my birthday?
Your birthday. You're not even going to be here on your birthday. You're not even going to be
Friday night is my birthday. That's when Jamie said.
Oh, this is a good question. But no. Okay. Jamie leaves on Friday. She goes out of town on Friday.
I think she changed it.
Are you sure? Look at us.
And she said, it's okay. We could do it Thursday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do it Thursday night.
Yeah. Let's do it.
It's my birthday. If you guys aren't there, I'm going to kill you.
We're like zooming in. We're like, hey, happy birthday.
Yeah. So I guess Thursday night it is. And then I go to Vegas, which is kind of good because I'm going to try to go to Vegas on Friday and birthday present to myself. I go see Beyonce on Saturday.
Beyonce. And my friend
flies in on Friday. So I might as well just go see Adele on Friday.
Oh, you should do a twofer. You should do Adele on Friday and Beyonce. That's like the girl. That's like the dream.
2 days in Vegas, though, is a lot, isn't it?
I mean, that's a limit. 2 days is the limit. You could do a pool party during the day on Saturday.
Oh, that is true.
Uh-huh. You better get your G-string out, girl, but get that booty going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I love you so much. And we are Women on Top Official on Instagram.
And Women on Top Podcast on Facebook. And Women on Top Official on TikTok.
And guys, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and comment. And I am Tamin Sirstock.
And I am Roxy Manning.
And we are
Women on Top.